All right. Welcome, everyone. Welcome back. Welcome if you missed last week. We're really excited to have Rabbi Ziering give like another part of his series, Shemitah as a lens into Torah law, into the nature of Torah law. And we're going to be talking about, I think, the messy connection between Shabbat and Shemitah.
Exactly.
And I'll be sending the sources in the chat. Everyone keep muted and put your questions in the chat, and we will deal with them closer to the end. That being said, I'm going to turn it over to Rabbi Ziering.
Okay. Thank you, Arlie. Okay, so we've been talking primarily about the mitzvah of Tosefet Shviit, of adding to Shemitah in the weeks and months in anticipation of Shemitah, and then afterwards as well. And we had noted that in the Bavli, there are two positions which are recorded as to the source of this notion of Tosefet Shviit, of adding to Shemitah. Rabbi Kiva derives it from a pasuk, Bechareishu v'katzir tishbot, a verse which at first glance is talking not about Shemitah, not about the sabbatical year, but about Shabbat, the day. And Rabbi Ishmael derives it from oral tradition. And in the Yerushalmi, the names fall out. And part of, on the one hand, Psukim are cited. On the other hand, much of the conversation sounds more like it's Rabbi Ishmael, which led to week one, us trying to figure out the extent to which we're supposed to read the Bavli and the Yerushalmi in consonants, and how much we have to read them as the same, or how much we can recognize them as having different traditions. And then over the last 2 weeks, we spoke about localized issues in that question. What I want to turn today, this week and next week, we're going to be broadening our vision, is to talk about Shemitah more generally. But I want to do that through what I call the messy connections between Shabbat and Shemitah. So when I was first going through this Yerushalmi, I have a Chavruta on Shabbat, learning the Yerushalmi of Shviit. So we started in the way we've started this conversation, noting that the Bavli has two different positions. Rabbi Akiva, again, who derives the idea of Tosefet Shviit from Becharish v'Katzir Tishbot, and the Yerushalmi and Rabbi Shmuel from oral tradition, the Yerushalmi, part of it is rabbinic, part of it oral tradition, and we've talked about a little bit of those nuances. And in the Yerushalmi, those two are mixed. But at some point, I noticed to my chavruta that there doesn't seem to be a contradiction at all between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. And the contradiction that drove our first shiur was, in fact, contrived. And why was it contrived? It was contrived because, in fact, there are many, many psukim at play. Some of the commentaries on the Yerushalmi assume that the Yerushalmi is using the same psukim as the Bavli. And therefore, if it sees a certain pasuk that Rabbi Kiva uses in the Bavli, it assumes that the Yerushalmi is following the Bavli. But it turns out that there are many, many psukim in play. What I want to do today is really look at all those psukim, which, as we'll see, there are many possibilities of which psukim connect Shemitah to Shabbat, and see what we learn about the connection between Shabbat and Shemitah from that. Now, even before we look at the texts, the connections between Shabbat and Shemitah are somewhat obvious, right? You know, before we look at the text, throw out some connections between Shabbat and Shemitah, right? Why would I think that the idea of Shabbat and Shemitah are connected? You can text it or unmute yourself.
Seventh day, seventh year.
Okay, good, right? There's the numeric part. 7 days, 7 years. Great, right? That's like one of the obvious ones. What else? Right? It's rest. Now, that's true, right? Early says it's rest. That's true at two levels. One is in terms of what you do. The second in terms of what it's called, right? Shemitah, sometimes the psukim call it, right, Shemitah. But sometimes, as we'll see, the psukim call it Shabbat Haaretz. Literally, the Shabbat of the land. The land will rest, right? So both days are both time periods of rest. And in fact, they're so connected. So Kim connect it with the word Shabbat, right? There's Shabbat, what we usually call Shabbat Bereshit in the Gemara, right? Shabbat Bereshit, the Shabbat which reflects creation. And then there's Shabbat Haaretz, Shabbat Land. So they have the same terms. They're both sevens. They have similar themes. I see in the chat here, sacrifice what you can do, meaning there are certain things you can't do. Is that what that means? Right. There are certain things that are limits in terms of, which is true, right? In terms of, right, there's a sacrifice in terms of, right, like the type of work you can't do hurts your parnassah, right, your ability to make a living. Right. You know, in the case of Shemitah, at least the Torah explicitly tells you that you're going to be worried. Right. In the sixth year, you're going to start panicking and say, what am I going to do next year? I'm going to have no money, which in the case of Shabbat, it doesn't. But anyone who's familiar with, you know, with mid 20th century North America knows that Shabbat often went along with sacrifice, which people who kept Shabbat sacrificed and often lost their jobs on a weekly basis. And some people who couldn't handle that ended up sacrificing the Shabbat, which was not great, which, you know, my family being a very classic American family that came to the turn of the 20th century, that was, you know, that was the story of my great grandfather, right? Who did not give up his job, right? Because it was hard, right? It was very, very hard. They both have Ben Adam Lamakom aspects as well as Ben Adam Lachavero. Yes, right? They both have an element in which you recognize something about God, as well as there's a certain interpersonal element in terms of allowing people to have rest, helping out the poor, right? And we'll see that in the Psukim. Both affect almost all people directly and indirectly, so they're universal, right? That's true that both of them are all-encompassing mitzvot. Right, they take over their time period and affect really every aspect of life. Right, so even just intuitively looking at the psukim, you know, knowing the contours of Shabbat and Shemitah, it's obvious that these are going to be connected. But the question is, in exactly what ways, right? And here's where, if we turn to the Yerushalmi, we're going to get a fascinating amount of connections, which is what I want to turn to now. Let me just pull up the sources. Where is it on my, one second, to figure out where it is on my screen here for sharing. Oh, here we go. Okay, so this source sheet you'll see is very different than the last ones. It's not actually very source heavy. I mean, it has a lot of psukim, but a lot of it is, I want to show you things visually. So there are a lot of arrows here showing you what's actually going on and where we get things. So let's look at the sources. So as we mentioned, right, the Bavli's tradition, again, is that where do we get Tosefet Shviit? So Rabbi Kiva gets it, Becharishu v'katzir tishbot. The verse says, ostensibly talking about Shabbat, the day, but Rabbi Kiva understands it not that way. Rabbi Kiva Omer Ein Tzarich Lomar Charish VeKatzir Shel Shviit Sharei Kvar Ne'amar Sadcha Lo Tizra VeChar Mecha Lo Tizmor, because we already know that you can't plow on Shabbat and that you can't harvest on Shabbat. So why would you need another verse to tell you that you have to rest from plowing and from sowing and from pruning, etc.? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Kiva says, El Charish Shel Erev Shviit Shenichnas Le Shviit VeKatzir Shel Shviit Sheyatza Le Motzai Shviit. So it must be that we have this halacha of tosefet, of addition, that we forbid the plowing leading into Shemitah and the harvesting coming out of it. And Rabbi Ishmael has a different drasha, macharish reshut, abkatzir reshut, yatzar katzir omer shu mitzvah. Then no, what this teaches you is that on Shabbat, the only thing that's forbidden is voluntary rather than obligatory harvesting. Okay, fine. And as we noted, in the Yerushalmi, you have a contradiction. But you don't really, because if you look at the version that we have of the Yerushalmi says as follows here in 2. Ad imatai chorshin, k'tiv, sheshit yamim ta'asem asecha. 6 days you shall do your work. Uvayom ha-shvi'i tishbot. And on the seventh day you shall rest. Uchtiv b'chareshu v'katzir tishbot. And it says, you shall rest from plowing and from sowing. Now, the first thing you notice at the in the beginning of the Yerushalmi is, the Yerushalmi also cites a verse to explain why you have to add to Shemitah, but the primary verse that it quotes is not the Charisha v'Katzir Tishbot. It's not the verse of the Bavli. It's a different one. A different verse, which also is not talking about Shemitah, but talking about Shabbat. Namely, Sheshet Yamim Tasem Asecha. You shall work for 6 days. Uve Yom HaShvi'i Tishbot. And rest on the seventh day. So what I want to show you is the follows. Here, what you have is a picture of the actual Yerushalmi, as it'll appear in at least in the Oz V'Hadar version of the Yerushalmi. And here's something you need to know about Yerushalmi. The Bavli, people learn. Right? People read the Bavli. People have been reading the Bavli since it was written. A lot of people read the Bavli. More people read the Bavli now than ever before, but a lot of people read the Bavli. That means that it was edited because we have a lot of manuscripts of it and people cared because they read it and they realized there were mistakes and therefore they checked the manuscripts and eventually, right, people were working on it. The Rishonim were working on it, right? The medieval scholars were working on it. The Achronim were working on it. The publishers were working on it. So the Bavli's manuscripts were worked on and the published version is not perfect, but is very heavily edited. However, the Yerushalmi is a mess. And the Yerushalmi is a mess. Yerushalmi, we have one manuscript, not an excellent manuscript. No one really learned it, so no one updated it. And then suddenly, when people started really studying Yerushalmi, because no one had learned it and it wasn't well edited, they played fast and loose with the Yerushalmi. And what you will find much more in the Yerushalmi than you will ever in the Bavli is that when a commentator doesn't understand something, he will just rewrite the text, he'll erase the text, he'll add to the text, he'll change the text, because it is a mess. And therefore, if you look in the, you probably won't be able to see it on the screen, but let's see, I'll pull one out here. If you look at the Art Scroll Yerushalmi, you'll find something in the Art Scroll Yerushalmi that you would definitely not find in the Bavli. Right? The Bavli, I'm sure many of you have looked at an art scroll at some point in your life. It has comments on it. It has clarifying points, but it probably doesn't have what you get here. If you can sort of see on the bottom, there's a box, right? Which says textual and interpretive variants, right? The art scroll Yerushalmi has to pretty much on every page provide different versions because it has not been edited. And often it is not easy to understand. That's what happens in our passage in the Yerushalmi. Because if you look at our Yerushalmi, as I said, the verse that is quoted, the source for Tosefet Shviit, is not a pasuk about Shemitah, it's a pasuk about Shabbat. But it's not the same verse as the Bavli. Instead, it is Sheshet Yamim Taseh Maasecho V'Yom HaShviti Tishbot. Nevertheless, if you look at the commentaries create a contradiction by changing the verse back to what it says in the Bavli. Right? If you look here in the Pnei Moshe, for example, where this arrow is, he just changes it. Right? And he says, "Kein sarich lomar." Right? That's not the text he had in front of him. It's just the text he changed it to, so that it would look like the Bavli. And similar, if you look at the Gra, right, the Gra here says Tiv, Sheshet Yamim Taaseh Maaseh Chav Yom Hashvi'i Tishbot, Uchtiv V'Charish V'Katzir Tishbot Tzarich Lomar. Right, he changes it again to look like the Bavli. Now, the reason why there might not be a contradiction between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi is that they may be recording not two traditions, but three. Right, that the Bavli has Rabbi Kiva's position that we derive the addition of Shemitah from Becharishu V'Katzir Tishbot. Rabbi Shmuel, who derives it from an oral tradition, and the Yerushalmi, which seems to mix and match Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, the reason is because it derives it from yet a different pasuk of Sheshet Yamim Taseh Maaseh Chol Hayom HaShvi'i Tishpot. Now, I know that sounds very technical, and if people don't follow why that solves the problem, right, simply it being a different tradition, that's okay. But what I want to do now is turn to these psukim and see whether it makes a difference, right? Meaning, as we've already said, there's good reason to believe that Shabbat and Shemitah are connected. But does the verses that we pick, right, does the verse we pick matter in terms of what do we think it means and in what ways are Shabbat and Shemitah connected? So to do this, let's turn to the psukim themselves. So the central psukim of Shemitah are here in Vayikra Chafei. Technically, there are seven different units, at least in the Torah, which according to Chazal, talk about Shemitah, but this is the primary one in Parshat Beha. So the verses tell us as follows. Vayidaber Adonai al Moshe b'har Sinai lemor. So God speaks to Moshe at Har Sinai. Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'amarta lehem. Ki tavo el ha'aretz asher ani noten lachem v'shavta ha'aretz Shabbat l'Adonai. Right, so the first hint that Shemitah and Shabbat are connected is that the verses themselves call the rest of the land a Shabbat. Right? The land shall rest as a Shabbat for God. And then, as people noted, the number game is also the same. Namely, Sheishanim Tizra Sadecha, the Sheishanim Tizmor Karmecha, Vaasavta et Tvuata. For 6 years you shall sow your field, and for 6 years you'll prune your vineyard and gather in your produce. And in the seventh, right, the seventh year, right, so 6 and 1, same as regular Shabbat. Vashana Shvi'it Shabbat Shabbaton Yeh La'aretz Shabbat L'Adonai. Sadcha lo tizra v'karmecha lo tizmor. You have a Shabbat in which you will not plant and you will not prune. Et sfiach ketzircha lo tiktor v'in vein izirecha lo tiktor. Shnat Shabbaton Yeh La'aretz. But you shall not reap the aftergrowth of your harvest or gather the grapes of your untrimmed vines. It shall be a year of complete rest for God. Vaita Shabbat ha'aretz lachem le'ochla, l'cha ul'avdecha v'la'amatecha, v'listercha v'lutoshavecha ha'garim nach. And it will be a Shabbat for you to eat, for your servants, and for your maidservants and your workers and those who live among you, the denizens, and the sojourners. To the animals and the wild animals in your land, all the produce will be to eat. And as several people mentioned before, right, so now the parallels we have, besides the fact that it's 6 and 1, and it is in fact called Shabbat, and substantively is a day of rest, there's also the interpersonal and the theological aspects, right? There's the connection to God. There's also the concern being expressed for the less fortunate members of society, the slaves, the servants, the workers, and even the animals, right, where Shemitah is to take care of them, right, which we hear as well in Shabbat, where your animals have to rest, right, your servants get a chance to rest. So these parallels between Shabbat and Shemitah are piling up. And then, as we know, the next halacha is not just about 6 and 1, but it's this magic number 7, when multiplied by the magic number 7, gets you yet another law, right? The super Shemitah, which is Yovel, right? 7 sevens. And then the day after the year after the 7 sevens, you get Yovel. V'safarta lecha sheva shaptot shanim, sheva shanim, sheva pe'amim, v'yu lecha yimei sheva shaptot shanim, teisha v'arbaim shana. So you'll count 7 times 7 years, and you'll have 7 Sabbatot, 7 Sabbath of years, sabbaticals, which will get you 49. And then you'll blow the shofar on Yom Kippur of the 50th year. Shana. Ukratem dror baretz chol yoshva, yovel hi tiyelochem, Vishavtem ishal achuzato v'ishal mishpachto tashuvu. And you'll sanctify your 50, and you will declare freedom in the land, or as it is on the Liberty Bell, right? You will declare liberty, right? You will declare liberty for those Americans, or anyone who knows anything about American history knows the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia has this pasuk in English, right? That's why it's called the Liberty Bell. And it'll be a jubilee for you, right? V'shaftem ishal chuzato v'ishal mishpachto tashuvu, and people will return to their land, to their inheritance, to their family. Yovel hi shnat chamishim shnat yelachem lo tizra'u v'lo tiksuru tzificha v'lo tiksuru nizireha. And again, in the 50th year, it will be a time where you can't plant and you can't harvest. Ki yovel hi kodesh yelachem min asadeh tochlu etuata. Because it's a jubilee, it's holy for you. And you will eat what is in the field. Okay, these are the classic verses where you already see these parallels between Shabbat and Shemitah, right? It's called a Shabbat. The number 7 is magical. 6 plus 1, more specifically, is magical. There is this idea of recognizing God, which is obviously part of the idea of Shabbat. There's this idea of taking care of the less fortunate in society, which is part of Shabbat. The animals are taken care of, which is an idea in Shabbat. All of that is true. What we start to see, though, in the Gemara is that the connections between Shabbat and Shemitah were so fundamental for Chazal, were so fundamental for the sages of the Talmud, that they started taking verses that don't talk about Shemitah, that talk about Shabbat, and they just read them as if they talked about Shemitah, right? So the one that Rabbi Kiva has, as we've seen, is this one, right? In Shmot Lamed Dalad, Sheishit Yamim Ta'avod, Uvayom Ashvi Tishbot, Becharish Uvekatzir Tishbot. Right, again, at first glance, it seems to be talking about days, not years. Shabbat, as we know it. And yet, Rabbi Kiva looks at this pasuk and reads it as follows, right? If you have the translation, right? This is just the standard translation from the JPS, right? 6 days you shall work, but on the 7th day you shall cease from labor, right? Rabbi Kiva reads it as 6 years you shall work, and in the 7th year you shall rest, plus b'charish v'katzir tishbot. Right, which the literal translation is, you shall cease from labor, right? Even plowing and harvesting. Rabbi Kiva reads it as, you shall additionally stop plowing in anticipation of the 7th year during year 6, and you will not harvest from Shemitah in year 8, right? So a verse that at first glance tells you that on Shabbat the day, you don't plow or harvest, Rabbi Kiva transforms it twice, right? It's talking about Shemitah and not Shabbat, and it's talking about the year before and the year after Shemitah rather than Shemitah itself. Now, what jumps out at you with Rabbi Kiva is that, at least at first glance, it sounds like not only does he think that Shemitah and Shabbat are similar, right? It's almost as if he thinks they're identical. Right, because they're so fundamentally connected that verses that are talking about Shabbat at first glance, in the deeper level, are not talking about Shabbat. They're talking about Shemitah. Now, that's a little bit strange, but it doesn't tell us much about the ways in which Shabbat and Shemitah are connected. All it tells you is that Rabbi Kiva seems to believe that they're deeply connected such that you can interchange psukim that are talking about one to talk about the other. Take psukim that are talking about Shabbat and transform them into psukim that are talking about Shemitah. Even more fascinating to me, though, is the possibility that the Yerushalmi is not citing the same verse, right? Again, remember that the Yerushalmi itself seems to be quoting a different verse. Sheishit yamim ta'aseh ma'asecha. Now, why is that more fascinating to me? because besides the fact that it potentially resolves the contradiction between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, if you look at the psukim that are being quoted there, we actually might understand why Chazal would link Shabbat and Shemitah for halachot. Because even though in the central psukim that we just looked at, right, about Shemitah, there's a lot of similarities, right? Shemitah, Shabbat, 7, 6, and 1, rest, God, helping your fellow man. All those things are beautiful. But still, in the end of the day, it doesn't say the laws of Shabbat and the laws of Shemitah are the same, right? There's thematic connections, clearly. But if you look at the verses that are being quoted in our version of the Yerushalmi, things change strikingly. So if you look here at number 5, and I see I have a comment, but let me at least get the psukim out here. These are the psukim that are being quoted by our Yerushalmi. Sheish shanim tizra et artzecha va'asafta et tzluata. For 6 years, you shall plant, you sow the land, and gather its produce. So, pasuk yod here. Is it talking about Shabbat the day or Shabbat the year, right? Shabbat or Shemitah? Right? 6 years you shall plant. I saw some people mouth, though I know you're muted, Shemitah. Yeah, it's talking about Shemitah, right? It's pretty clearly talking about Shemitah. Next pasuk as well. Vahashvi'it, and the 7th year, tishmitena unitashta, you'll let it rest and lie flat fallow. The achlu evyone amecha, v'itram tochal chayar asadeh, kein ta'aseh lekarmecha lezeitecha. The poor people will eat, and what's left will go to the animals, right? And that's what you'll do for your olives and for your vineyards. Again, Shabbat or Shemitah? Shemitah. And what does it teach us about Shemitah? In this verse, what's the purpose? Support the poor, or give the poor something to eat, and your animals something to eat. Pasuk Yud Bet is the verse that's quoted by the Yerushalmi. Sheshet yamim ta'aseh ma'asecha, uvayom ha-shvi'i tishbot. For 6 days, you'll do your work, and on the 7th day, you will rest. Lima'an yanuach shorcha v'chamorecha, so that your ox and your donkey can rest. V'nafesh ben amatcha v'hager, and your bondsman, right, and the stranger will rest. This pasuk, right, this set of psukim actually connects it in a much more direct way than the classic psukim about Shemitah, right? Because here you have two verses that are definitely about Shemitah, the year, and then you transition into, at first glance, Shabbat. Now, this explains two things. At one level, it explains why you might think that these verses aren't really talking about Shabbat the day. They're really talking about Shabbat the year, right? Because it comes as part of a three-verse unit, of which two of them are clearly about Shabbat of years, about Shemitah. But whether you think that this pasuk is actually talking about Shemitah, or you think it's talking about Shabbat, the fact that the Torah integrates them together tells you how much they're connected. And as several people said before, it explains the substance of that connection, right? Or at least one or two levels of the substance of that connection, right? Here, it's mostly the interpersonal or even person-to-animal components. Right, it connects Shabbat and Shemitah and says, you know, in what sense they're connected. They're connected because both days of rest have a social welfare component, a charity component, right? To take care of the poor, to take care of the poor worker, to take care of those who are disadvantaged. either in the case of Shemitah. Well, actually, let me pause for a second, right? On the one hand, the Psukim make it very clear. Shabbat and Shemitah are connected. Both of them have a social component where you take care of the poor or the poor worker, and both of them take care of the animals. Okay? So in that sense, they're connected. But does anyone notice the way in which they're not connected? Right? Right? They're clearly connected. 6 and 1, they're both called Shabbat. Right? They both talk about taking care of the poor and or workers. They both talk about taking care of animals. So on the one end, you look at it and you say, aha, Shabbat and Shemitah, they're basically the same thing. And that is at some level true. But then if you take a double take, right, and you look back at the Psukim, you'll notice that right now someone here writes that it is relevant that sometimes Yamim in the Torah means a year. Yes, right? Obviously, at some level, the fact that Chazal feel comfortable, right? Ilana makes the point that the fact that Chazal sometimes take a pasuk that talks about days, right? Work for 6 days and rest in the seventh day. The reason that they can interpret that as meaning years is because sometimes the word yom or yamim mean years, right? As we know from the conversation between Rivka's brother and mother with Eliezer, right? They request, right? Eliezer wants Rivka to come with him immediately. And Rivka's mother and brother say, let her stay with us, yamim o asor, right? Days or 10 months, right? And it's clear in context that yamim means a entire cycle of days, meaning 300, right? Whatever they're using, solar, lunar, 354, 365. Days, meaning a unit of days, i.e. a year, or 10 months. One second, I see two questions. Okay, I'll take the last one here first. So someone says, well, the bondsman isn't mentioned. Right. So one point is that at first glance, both Shabbat and Shemitah talk about the disadvantaged members of society. However, they're not quite the same people. They might often overlap, right? But they're not actually the same people, right? Shemitah helps the poor. Shabbat helps the worker, right? Now, a farmhand might be poor, but that's not precisely what's going on, right? Shabbat is helping the workers, and Shemitah is helping the poor. There's a similar difference in terms of the animals, right? Both Shabbat and Shemitah help the animals, but not the same animals, right? Right? Which do they help? Right? Shabbat helps whose animals? Your animals, right? Because you can't work your animals. Shemitah helps all animals and wild animals. Why? Right? Both of the differences boil down to the same point. Because on Shabbat, the primary, right, especially in this context, these psukim are focusing on the fact that you give up control of the land. Therefore, the primary benefit being described here of Shemitah isn't that you don't work and that your workers get a year off, which may be true, but is that they get free food. Right, is that you give up control of the produce, and therefore the poor get food, and the wild animals can eat food. Shabbat, the way you express the Shabbatness of Shabbat is by not working, and therefore your animal doesn't get free food, your animal gets a day off. The poor workers don't get free food, right? They get a day off. And therefore, in Shabbat, the reason that it's good for the poor is not because they're poor, but because they work. In Shemitah, the reason that it's good for them is because they're poor and they get free food. So on the one hand, 6-in-1 days of rest, help the animals, help the less wealthy. That's all the same. And in that sense, the psukim very clearly connect Shabbat and Shemitah to the point where you might think that these psukim are really about Shabbat rather than Shemitah. Sorry, Shemitah rather than Shabbat. But on the other hand, what you learn is that there's also different dimensions. The interesting thing, however, is that what happens if you think that these psukim are not about Shabbat, they're about Shemitah? Right? Something very messy happens, right? Because if the way you read these psukim is that two of them are about Shemitah, and they say that during Shemitah, the main purpose of Shemitah is that you give up control of the land so the poor get free food and the animals get free food. And the main point of Shabbat is that it's a day of rest, so your workers rest and your animals rest. What happens when you reinterpret the pasuk and say, nah, pasuk Yud Bet is also about Shemitah? Then what do you suddenly learn about Shemitah? That Shemitah is about rest, right? Because if this pasuk is not about Shabbat, it's about Shemitah, right? So there's a lot at stake as to whether Shabbat, right? The pasuk here is really about Shabbat or Shemitah, right? The juxtaposition of the pasuk can make it clear that Shabbat and Shemitah are similar. But if the first two psukim are about Shemitah and the last one is about Shabbat, then that tells you that the main purpose of Shemitah is to give up control of your land and help the poor and the animals by giving them food, or giving up your claim to the food more precisely. And the main way that you help the animals and the workers on Shabbat is by letting them have time off. But if the third pasuk is reinterpreted to be about Shemitah, then you learn that that Shemitah itself has a dual identity. Right? That on the one hand, there's a value in Shemitah of giving up control and helping animals and the poor by giving them, right, by letting them claim food. But there's also a benefit of letting them have time off, right? So is the juxtaposition supposed to imply comparison and contrast? Or are you supposed to reinterpret the pasuk to have a multi-layered Shabbat Shemitah experience? Right? That's really what's going on here, is that by reinterpreting the pasuk, you're introducing new elements into Shemitah. This, to me, comes even clearer in a comment of the Maharafal. So if we continue here in the Yerushalmi, if you remember, the end of the Yerushalmi tells us that there were two stages in halachic history. There was the stage in halachic history where the rabbis felt it was prohibited to plant and plow in anticipation of Shemitah. And then there was a period in history where they found a new pasuk and permitted working in anticipation of Shemitah. Now, which pasuk is it? So here again, we have a lot of possibilities. We have one possibility, which is here in the Yerushalmi itself, which is Sheshet Yamim Ta'avod Vasita Kol Melachtecha. 6 days you shall work and you shall do all your work in those 6 days. Ma Erev Shabbat Reishit Ad Mutar Lasot Melacha Ashet Tishka Chama. And just like by Shabbat, you can work all the way until sunset. Af Erev Shabtot Hashanim Ad Mutar Lasot Melacha Ashet Tishka Chama. So too, there's no addition to Shemitah. You're allowed to work until the sun sets on Shemitah, right? That's one possible verse. However, if you look at these arrows here, the Gra has a different possibility, namely, Vishavta ha'aretz Shabbat la'Hashem. The pasuk is derived from Vayikra Chavei, right? The original verses that we saw. The Marafolda has yet a different one. And he says it's from Sheish Yamim Tasem Melacha. But before we look at their psukim and see what else we can glean, I want to show you the Marafol. So here's the Marafol. He's one of the central commentaries on the Yerushalmi. And here's what he says. He says, Hachi Garsin. First of all, he changes the text. Shesh yamim ta'aseh, ma'aseh chav yom ha'shvi tishpot b'charesh v'katzer tishpot. And then he has two possibilities. He says, okay. In what way, how do we compare Shabbat and Shemitah? So possibility one. Ki kish hakatuv tishbot diyom ha'shvi'i litishbot v'charesh v'katzer shein mayri b'shvi'it. We halachically compare Shabbat and Shemitah. And just like by Shabbat, you don't have to add, which is not totally clear, but okay. By Shemitah, you don't have to add, right? Hekishan lehetera. We compare them for the purpose of permitting work leading into Shemitah. Lomar lecha to tell you, mashavat reshit, just like Shabbat, you don't add. Shemitah, you don't add. Possibility two, lishna acharina. Krad aser adibrot hu. He says, first of all, it might be a different pasuk. V'alfinan shvi'it mishabbat reshit. And we derive laws of Shemitah from Shabbat, dehata'am echad lahem, because they have the same rationale. Desheshet shanim, neged sheshet yamim, for 6 days are parallel to 6 years, ushana shvi'it neged Shabbat, and Shabbat and Shemitah are parallel. Or as you have it in Rabbeinu Chananel, in number 9, Uktiv v'Shabbat bereshit, ma erev Shabbat bereshit ata mutar lasor ad shetishka chama, af erev shviit ata mutar lasor ad shetishka chama. He just uses the mechanism known as a mematzim. Right now, this is sounds technical, but let me try to explain why it's important. The Marafolda has two explanations for why we're allowed to compare the laws of Shabbat to Shemitah. One possibility is called a hekesh. Right, a legal comparison using similar concepts or similar words. When you use a hekesh, what you're saying is that the two halachic categories that are being compared are similar, but not identical. Right, they're similar, but not identical. And therefore, certain laws can be borrowed from one to the other. Again, they're not the same. They're similar. A mematzinu goes like this. Mematzinu, there's no comparison of words or concepts or whatever. Mematzinu just goes like this. If we find it in category A, it must be true in category B. Why? Because A and B are conceptually the same. And therefore, it's natural for the laws to flow from one to the other. Now, in both cases, you're borrowing laws from one to the other, but the mechanism is still just subtly different, right? A hekesh tells you they're similar, but different. So we can borrow some laws, but that doesn't tell you they're identical. A mematzinu says they're basically the same, and that's why they have the same laws. And this is what the Marafolda is telling you is not clear in our Gemara. Right? He says, possibility one, it's a hekesh. They're similar, so they have some similar laws. Possibility two, tam echad lahem. They're really the same. They have the same rationale. So this brings us to the question that we saw already in the Psukim. On the one hand, Shabbat and Shemitah are very similar. 6 in 1. They both, in some level, have theological aspects about remembering who controls the world. They both limit us in terms of what we can do, in terms of the work we can do in the field. They both show concern for animals and for the less fortunate members of society. In that sense, they're all similar. On the other hand, they're different. Shabbat. The main issue is not working. And that's how you help the day of rest. In Shemitah, it has an element of giving up control, right? Where you help people more by providing them with food rather than just with rest. Hence, It's the poor rather than your workers that benefit. It's the wild animals rather than your animals who benefit. But more than that, right? There are other differences, such as in Shemitah, only agricultural milachot are forbidden. On Shabbat, as we know, many other things are forbidden, right? You can light a fire during Shemitah. You cannot light a fire on Shemitah. Sorry, on Shabbat, right? You can cook during Shemitah. You can't cook on Shabbat. And more than that, in Shemitah, is all agricultural work forbidden? No, right? You're allowed. The rule is, le'ukme ilana. If all you're doing is making your produce survive, it's permitted. So you can water your plants to make them survive, but not to flourish, right? Le'ukme ilana velo le'evruye ilana, right? To help your tree to survive, but not to make it thrive. On Shabbat, you can't water your plants, even if they're going to die, right? Because they're not identical. And I think this is the tension that's being played out here, which is it's undeniable that Shabbat and Shemitah are at some level connected, right? They both have six in one, and both of them are in a certain sense about rest, and in a certain sense about taking care of others, in a certain sense about recognizing God's control over the world. But on the other hand, they're distinct. Shemitah is about giving up ownership. Shabbat is about rest. Shemitah is about helping the poor. Shabbat is about helping workers. Shemitah is about helping the wild animals. Shabbat is about helping your animals. Shemitah is about not doing agricultural work. Shabbat is about not doing any work. Shemitah is about not doing agricultural work that's not necessary to maintain basic survival of produce. Shabbat is about doing no agricultural work. And the question is, what do we do with that? One could look at it and say, okay, so what we learn is that they're similar, but not the same, right? They have certain elements that are the same, and we should not give up on that. But the fact that they're distinct tells you at the end of the day, Shabbat is about remembering creation of the world. Shemitah is about remembering that God owns the earth. Shabbat is about not doing any work. Shemitah is about not doing agricultural work. They're similar, but fundamentally they're different. Or are you saying, no, no, no. Really, they're the same. It's just that, I don't know, come up with a practical explanation. It's one thing to tell people not to work at all for a day, but you can't do that for a year, right? So if you were going to stretch Shabbat out to a year, you need to be more lenient, right? It's like, right, our fast days are super fast days. Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av are 25 hours, right? The Muslim super fast day is still only a daytime fast, but that's because it's stretched out over a month, right? So when you stretch out something, right, you stretch out a fast over a month, you obviously can't make it a day and night fast because people will die, right? So maybe this is essentially what's going on. And I think what constantly reading them together by both noticing their similarities and highlighting the potential differences, the question we need to ask is the question that Mara Fuld asks. Is the message you're supposed to get that Shabbat and Shemitah are really two sides of the same coin and the differences between them is just practical, right? That like Shabbat is once a week, so we can experience Shabbat in its most intense form. When we stretch it over the year, it's basically the same thing, but God, so to speak, gives us some leniencies, right? Because, you know, you can't actually not work for an entire year, right? Or do you say the differences highlight the fact that they're similar mechanisms, but their fundamental theology is different. Shabbat is about declaring that God created the world, and therefore your main job is to not work, to not be creative. Shemitah is about showing that God owns the world, and therefore your main job is to not express ownership over the land, right? Again, similar, but not the same. And that, I think, is the tension that you need to read throughout these verses. Before we look at the last verses that are in play here, I'll look at the comments here because I see there's a bunch. One second. Okay, let's just get them. One second. Okay, I have one comment here. According to Rabbi B. Barry Levy, the Rishonim edited the Torah to suit the commentary of the Zohar as explained and sourced in his book. One second, I lost that. Fixing God's Torah, changing the Talmud, either one is easier to understand. It is definitely easier to change the Talmud than the Torah. That's definitely true. I'm not suggesting changing the Torah, that's for sure. Which is being addressed, the individual farmer as the nation as a whole. Now, that may also be a difference, right? While in Shemitah, each farmer has an individual goal, and Shabbat is definitely focused on the individual. In Shemitah, even though each individual has a role, there may be a level at which this is a national project. Yovel is much more national because, right, the land all returns, right? There's a overturn of the economic system. So there really it is national. But that is another difference where Shemitah and definitely Yovel feel more national than personal. During Shemitah, how do the poor pay rent and other expenses? Well, their food, they theoretically can get for free. How they get other expenses, who knows, right? They find other work to do. They get handouts. I don't know, right? Meaning their food bill theoretically can be covered, theoretically, assuming there's enough food for everybody. When I say they found a new pasuk, right? I don't mean they created a new pasuk, right? I mean they, right, found a pasuk talking about Shabbat and brought it in conversation with Shemitah. There are limits to how much the poor can gather. Yes, there's a limit to how much everyone can gather. Everyone is allowed to take as much as they need, including the owner. Right, you're allowed to take your own produce, but only as much as you need. You can't take more than that, and you can't sell that, except maybe minimal selling just to sort of switch vegetables. Maybe that's permitted. But no, you're not allowed to take to sell. Okay, with all of that in mind, let's look at the two other possible psukim that are brought in conversation by the commentaries that we saw. One of them is, in fact, the one from the Aseret HaDibrot, and that's what the Marafulda notes here. And this is fascinating, right? If you think that the Aseret HaDibrot, right, the Ten Commandments are talking about Shemitah, right, then the connection between Shabbat and Shemitah is quite deep, and the theology of Shemitah is very different, right? Because let's read the Pesukim, let's think about it once as it being about Shabbat and once about Shemitah. Zachor et yom haShabbat leKadsho. Remember the day of Sabbath to keep it holy. Sheish yamim tavod vasita kumachtecha. For 6 days you work, and the seventh you'll rest. The yom haShvi Shabbat laAdonai alecha lo taseh chol melacha tav v'nchavitecha avdecha v'matcha v'mtecha v'gercha asher b'sharecha. And the seventh day will be for God. Don't do work. You, your children, right? Your sons, your daughters, your servants, your maidservants, your animals, and the sojourner. Ki sheish yamim asa Adonai eshomai ve'aretz eriyam mitkol shirabam. Because God created the world in 6 days and rested on day seven, and therefore he blessed the seventh day. Now, if you think that this is just about Shabbat, so it's just about Shabbat. But if it's about Shemitah, then suddenly we learn that not only is Shemitah trying to remind us that God owns the land, but it's trying to remind us that God owns the land because he created the land, right? So again, if Shabbat is different from Shemitah, then Shabbat is when we remember that God created the world, and Shemitah is when we remember he owns it. But if these psukim are really about Shemitah as well, then expressing the fact that God owns the land, apparently, is an admission or an acknowledgement of the fact that he created it. Furthermore, as we said, if you don't read these psukim about Shemitah, then Shabbat is about letting your workers rest. Shemitah is about providing them with food. If these psukim are about both Shabbat and Shemitah, then part of Shemitah's goal is to also make you rest, not just provide people with food. Yet another pasuk that's in conversation here is here in Vayikra Lamed Hey. This is from the Rosh Tzivilio. Vayakel Moshe et kol adat b'nei Yisrael vayomer aleihem eila advarim asher tzivah Adonai lasarotam. God gathers the Jews and he tells them, this is what God commanded you. Sheshit yamim ta'aseh melacha, v'yom ha'shvi'i elechem kodesh, Shabbat Shabbaton l'Adonai kol oseh v'om melacha yumat. Now, if this pasuk is in question, right, then you get yet another element which is important, and that is the idea that part of declaring the seventh year Shemitah is Kodesh, is that it's an expression of holiness, which is something which is not nearly as pronounced in Shemitah as it is in Shabbat. But if this pasuk is about Shabbat as well as Shemitah, so then it is, so then it's critical to both the Shabbat and Shemitah experience. So what I wanted to do by this, by just going through all the psukim, is to highlight the following. When anyone reads the Torah, it's clear that there's some sort of connection between Shabbat and Shemitah. They both have these magic numbers of 6 and 1. They're both days, they're in both in some sense about rest. They both have certain theological statements about God's relationship to the world. They have certain social elements in terms of how we treat other people, in terms of how we treat the animals. But they also have differences. And the question is, to what extent do we focus on those differences? And to what extent do we explain them away? And by looking through all of these, right, you present different visions. One vision is to say, Shabbat and Shemitah are basically the same. It's just that they express themselves differently because one is a day and one is a year. But both of them are about protecting the disadvantaged. There's two ways of doing that. One is to let them rest. The other is to give up your claim to land and let them take food. Both of them are about declaring God creating the world, which has two expressions. One is not working on Shabbat. The other is about recognizing that God created the world. He owns the world, and therefore you have to give up ownership during Shemitah and Yovel. That's one way of, right? And according to that, Shabbat is about holiness. Shemitah is about holiness, right? Whatever holiness is exactly. The other way to look at it is to say, no, the idea of Shabbat is central to Judaism, and it expresses itself in different ways. There's Shabbat of year, Shabbat of days, but each of them has its own lesson to teach. It's not just one, right? One synthetic whole. They're actually supposed to be similar, but subtly different, because different times highlight different ideas. Shabbat is when we remember that God created the world, and fundamentally we acknowledge that by resting. Shemitah is where we recognize that God owns the world, and we recognize that by giving up our control of our loans, of our land, right, of our produce, or in Yovel, of the land. Shabbat is about taking care of the poor by letting them rest. Why? We didn't get a chance to go into it, but as it says in one version, the Aseret HaDibrot, right, the one in Vayet Chanan, because it remembers our time as slaves in Egypt. And therefore, the way you express remembering that God took us out of Egypt is by letting people not be slaves and not work. Shemitah is a different type of Shabbat, where you give up ownership so that people can be free economically. They may have to work, as someone mentioned, to pay their rent, but they won't have to worry about their next meal, right? And I think that the tension between these two visions, right? One is to accentuate the similarities and say, oh, it's all Shabbat, it's all the same, borrow from one to the other, right? It's all about holiness, it's control and creation, that's the same thing. Helping people by giving them food or by letting them rest and having, you know, a better work schedule, that's all the same, right? One is to say, look, everything is synthesized. The other vision, though, is to say, no. Shabbat, every 6 and 1 is a time to stop and reflect on something, theologically, socially, economically. But God in his wisdom didn't mix up all those ideas at the same time, right? He gave us Shabbat during the week to acknowledge his creation of the world, the importance of rest, the importance of not being taskmasters. And he gave us the Shabbat of years to teach us the importance of him creating, of controlling the world, of giving up ownership, of stop trying to express our control all the time, right? Helping people by letting them take without feeling like they're getting handouts, right? But rather in that vision, it's similar to Shabbat, but it's different, right? They're similar, but not the same. That God intentionally made them different so that we could experience different lessons in their intensified forms in the different types of Shabbat. And I think this is the major question we have to ask. And that's why I called it the messy connections between Shabbat and Shemitah, because undeniably they're similar. But the question is, are they so similar that we're supposed to basically make it as if it's one, the same thing? Or are we supposed to acknowledge the difference, right? Are we supposed to make a big deal of the fact that on Shabbat, you can't do any malacha, you can't cook, you can't clean. And on Shemitah, you only can't do agricultural work, but other work you can, right? You can drive so that you can go to a shir, right? So that you can use the time to see family because you don't have to work in your field, right? Where on Shabbat, if you want your family who doesn't live in the same town to come, they have to stay by you, right? Those are different experiences. And maybe we're supposed to acknowledge that those are different ideals that we experience at different times. And I think that's the major question. We can never forget that Shabbat and Shemitah are similar and therefore have similar lessons. But the question is, it is the goal of the Torah to tell us it's all basically the same thing, or to tell us that no, the idea of six and one, of taking a time to rest, is important, but it teaches different lessons depending on the lens that it's being reflected through, right? And that's, I think, what I call the messy connections, right? They're connected, but how much we choose to highlight the comparisons versus the contrast is how much we're going to understand the precise lesson and experience the Torah wants us to have in Shemitah. So that's what I think comes out just from a careful look at all the different psukim that are in play here. And it also gives a little bit of a light into just how complicated it is sometimes to learn Yerushalmi, because you don't even know what psukim are in play. And in this particular case, as we've seen, it's really important to figure out what's in play, because it sheds different light on what Shemitah really is and how much it's just another Shabbat and how much it's something unique in its own Shabbat year of years experience. Does my personal opinion fall on one side or the other? Not yet. Maybe after learning, Shemitah more for a year, I will have more of an idea. But I intend on spending the whole year. I'll be teaching it in yeshiva, so I will be learning it all year. Maybe by the end, I'll have a stronger feeling which one is primary. But at this point, I'm living with the tension and keeping my eyes out for hints of both models. For people who are interested, if you look through Rav Hirsch's comments, you'll see that Rav Hirsch consistently likes the comparison model and makes a big deal of it. And if you go through Rav Hirsch's comments throughout the Torah, you'll see that he is much more into the comparison model as opposed to other commentaries who do highlight the differences. So and you'll see the different theologies, different emphases emerge from that. But we are already a few minutes over time, so I'll end with that. Orly, take it away for whatever announcements there are. Next week will be the last week. We will turn to what Tosefet Shvi'it is. I forget what we called it, expanding holiness or preparing or for the year or something like that. Orly, yours, your the floor is yours for whatever.
Thank you. That was a great cheer. I really enjoyed it. Looking forward to next week. Thank you so much for giving it, and thank you to everyone for coming. Up tonight is the weekly Parshat HaShavua Shir with Rav Aviad Tabori. Tomorrow is Rabbi Kelman's Pirkei Avot Shir. And for any other programs that might interest you, I'm going to put the link to the program page in the chat. And thank you again, everyone, and Rabbi Ziering for coming.
Okay, have a good Shabbos, everyone.
Shabbat Shalom.